Okay. Do Quinn, do you need me to give you my Gmail, or can I just sign in with my Gmail?
Whatever you want to sign in with.
I think you have to give him your
Yeah, you
username
have to give
and
me the email
password.
you want to use. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
There we go. Let's use that one.
We're not even like into the main part of the podcast yet, and we're already into like jokes about Sneak and Show players.
How you doing, Magic Player? Let me whisper in your ear. I'll tell you some things you won't like to hear. I got a combat combo in your deck. Looks soft. Draw 7 cards and then try to go off. Came here with a real broken plan. Gonna do a force check to see if I can. Lead with fail, so you might be dead. And I don't mind splashing for red. You heard what I said. I use a power blast instead. One for one, so I'm pulling ahead. I think you're fucked. Tell yourself that it's just luck. This can't be happening. The combo sucks. Now you wish it didn't have all this business. Your false storms hadn't come missing. You've seen spies, but you never seen nothing like this. Just wait till you see my deck, hey girl. Wait till you see my deck, hey boy. Wait till you see my deck. I'm gonna beat these scrubs all up. Wait till you see my deck, hey boy. Wait till you see my deck. I'm gonna beat these scrubs all up.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy Podcast. It's opening with Volk Ponder, making you think, you know, maybe we're doing a little daze thing, playing a little Delver, and then you pass a turn, and we play a fucking Ancient Tomb, go to 18. Here to play real Magic. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it going?
Good. Very good. Thinking about the real Magic that is Ancient Tomb, Chalice of the Void.
Oh, wow. This guy. Well, let's get off of that bad thought and go to our other co-host, Brendan McBain. McBain, how's it going?
Ancient Tomb Painter Servant, maybe?
Yeah, I can get down with that.
Yeah, okay.
Pull that bulk up too. Yeah, okay. You got a, you got a blast.
Yeah,
you have a volcanic. Exactly. You have a volcanic. You can choose red or blue, your choice.
Yeah.
And we are, for the second episode in a row, joined by a special guest, a different special guest, Tristan O'Loughlin, the winner of the return, the Harry Wong Memorial Classic, perhaps the most prestigious tournament in the Greater Vancouver area, at least legacy wise. Tristan, welcome to the cast. How's it going?
It's good. I'm really happy to be here. I finally made it. I've peaked. This is great.
Yeah. I know you had almost given up and gone fully to modern, but you just came back and crushed, apparently. Maybe you sharpened your sword playing the young Zoomers.
I just reminded myself to have fun, and it worked out.
There you go.
Also, yeah, really, I mean, notably,
really we could. So go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say first podcast appearance, but not first, you know, podcast related media appearance. Astute listeners and viewers would remember Tristan from when we stayed up until fucking 4 o'clock in the morning playing no ban list show and tell.
A real experience, that one.
Yeah. I regret every time I think about that, not playing McBain's horrendous, like, balance prison tech.
Yeah, we kind of dropped the ball on playing something cool.
I know, right?
Yeah. Like that first deck we ran into that was like the Young Pyromancer Skull Clamp deck, like that was sick.
Yeah, we were just like, what if show
what
and tell
did we
dig
play that
time
was cool? Oh, we just played dig, right?
I think so.
Oh, and Git Probe, right?
Yeah.
Wow, we suck.
That does sound really lame.
That's so unspicy. All right, well, we're older, we're wiser, one of us is a winner, and we have no housekeeping. Nothing.
I'm out of work.
You missed your chance. If you missed Harry Wong, there's no more legacy to play. Ever.
It's done. We're done, folks.
Yeah,
there's no
crown
PAX
champion
online this year, right?
They haven't announced anything,
but PAX
they've
is been, like, in person this year, right?
The PAX or Gen Con, or was it like PAX at Gen Con? Because last time, last year at the beginning of September, they had Gen Con online. And they haven't announced anything for that.
Okay, I thought it was just like PAX, because PAX West is soon and it's just like happening in person.
I think it's just as they get closer to running Eternal Weekend events themselves, they get closer to Card Hoarder in announcing or Card Titan in announcing events about 2 hours before they happen. So
oh, speed. Wait, is Eternal Weekend going to be back?
See, who knows?
Like, usually we know if it's going to happen. We just don't know when.
No, we don't. Well, actually, around now is usually when they have like a stay tuned kind of thing. But now that I think about it, I don't think they do. They just like, you know, it's generally going to be like early November or something, if I recall. Or late October.
Is it always East Coast for Eternal Weekend?
It's always Pittsburgh, isn't it?
It's gone back between Columbus and Pittsburgh, but the last few times it's been in Pittsburgh.
I remember the last time you guys went, your flight got canceled, correct?
Almost. One flight got canceled. Elliot actually just sent me a picture today, because his phone reminded him of us in Newark with our overnight layover. The pints we had on the airline. That was a rough sleep.
I still remember the check-in person giving Elliot like a pillow and like a blanket. And he's like, his initial reaction of like, I don't know why you're giving this to me. And then he's like, yeah, it's going to be a long night.
When we were getting beers, and you guys were like, that beer's like 11%. I'm like, we're sleeping in an airport chair. I need a little like help to like pass out here.
So, Tristan, are you in?
Oh, for Eternal Weekend? I might be on my honeymoon.
Honeymoon in Pittsburgh, baby.
Oh, my.
Steel City.
They got a lot of bridges. That's
they got sometimes a bus falls in a hole.
How do you and Caitlin feel about French fries?
I love French fries.
What about them in the sandwiches?
Yeah.
Or on a salad.
Pittsburgh special.
I like them in wraps, because in Greece they do that with everything. They stick fries and everything. That's wraps.
That sounds good.
So, yeah.
That sounds like somebody ordered like Belgian French fries and didn't realize they're supposed to be wrapped in paper.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually a good sell if you want to explain why Pittsburgh is like a destination for your honeymoon. You'd be like, you know, it's like Greece. They put fries in everything. There's crumbling infrastructure that's probably a little too old.
How do you suggest I bring that up? Like, honey, I know we really wanted to go to Japan. Doesn't look like they're letting anyone in. Korea might be a bit of a pain in the ass. How about Pittsburgh?
Yeah, yeah. I think you just did it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like I'm getting goosebumps just hearing you say it.
Like, just clip this and play it. Like, just sit it down and just hit play.
She could probably hear it in the other room, honestly. So.
Make her listen to all the banter first and be like, listen, we'll just sit here for like 30 minutes and then there'll be something you need to hear.
Sure.
Oh, my God. You guys are out of control. We weren't recording last week, which is when we normally record. We had the Harry Wong Memorial Classic last weekend, so we kind of postponed the recording. Mainly because we knew there was going to be some kind of lucky winner that wasn't one of the three of us, and we get to have them on and talk about how they did and how we didn't do.
Well, we didn't have a lot of horses in the race, to be fair.
That is true.
was your weekend nice, McBain?
It was quite nice. Yeah, it was my parents' 40th anniversary, so I had to go be a good son and help do all that. It was good.
Beautiful Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, I caught a ferry boat. It was 45 minutes across Howe Sound.
The weather was nice, so that sounds good. Yeah,
was indeed. Jeff, what was your, like, were you playing like a Pioneer, like a cube draft sealed thing, or what were you doing?
I was actually all geared up to go. People locally know that I've missed a bunch of the weeklies and stuff recently, as well as, you know, had to take off from Puget Sound for some medical stuff. And we went in for like a checkup like 2 days before the Harry Wong, and like everything was like pretty good. And then they're like, oh, actually something is kind of fucked up. We have to take care of that again. So we kind of just, you know, set back to zero. And like, I want to be clear, everybody's fine. There's no like major crisis. It's just like, I need to take care of my dramatic old dog and I can't, you know, step away to play a children's card game for 10 hours. But I did manage to stop by and say hi to everybody and give some cards over to Marcus.
That's great.
Which yeah, I have for you.
Thank you.
I have them right here.
Send them through the webcam.
Yeah. Thanks again for being able to lend cards. That was great. I for a moment, I thought it was just the crumbling infrastructure that is Queensboro and like getting on and off of it. And that you like every once in a while just get trapped there.
You know, they just run the boat like for half an hour every day and then the waters come in and like you can't cross. So
yeah,
I just missed my window.
Yeah. So I guess we're just going to sit this one out and we'll make comedic jokes every once in a while. Maybe ask a few questions.
Same as usual.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were going to tee it up, but
I was going to say, but before we get to like the main event of Tristan crushing the entire thing, why don't we start on the other end of the spectrum with Quinn?
I thought we were going to talk about the top eight.
I guess, but
I'm just going in order.
Okay, we'll go. Well, let's do top eight. run it down here, Quinn.
Well, first there were 35 players who came out, and collectively we raised $1,750 for the BC Cancer Foundation, the most important part, other than Tristan winning, because he gets the amount of trophies. That's the most important part. So yeah, winners are charity. I think shout out to obviously the store, the connection, and to everyone who donated. There were like door prizes as well, which is always awesome. And like secret layers and do like fetch lands, like it was good shit, you know, like not just like stuff that no one obviously wanted, you know. So first that, and then the top eight, which features only 16 copies of Brainstorm, which is pretty good. 50% rate. Oh, actually, maybe 17 copies of Brainstorm. I'll let you ponder that for a second. Also, probably 17 copies of Ponder. I'll let you ponder that one too. No copies of the card Delver of Secrets. And hell, I think yeah, zero copies of Dragon's Rage Channeler as well.
Yeah, that looks about right.
Yeah.
And but tops like former Riptide Regions. So we have a top eight of where the one extra Brainstorm came in. Number one in the Swiss, Jack on Tainted Pact.
Woo!
Can someone like refresh? Is this like the Highlander deck that plays Tainted Pact and you can like basically Demonic Tutor for a card?
The only card you have two of is Tainted Pact.
No, and it's just like blue-black control, right?
Yeah.
There's two oracles as well.
Oh, yes, because you don't want to, if you exile your oracle, you're dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah, it's blue black control until you need to combo off, and then you exile your whole deck and play Oracle and win.
I think he had a Doomsday. I think he had a Doomsday in there as well.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Delightful.
Yeah.
Like truly big brain magic that usually when we say that on this podcast, we're being sarcastic, but like you have to know your whole list. One. You have to know like what you need, when you need it. You also have to find the Tainted Packs. And then outside of that, you need to be able to be like, oh, I'm going to like Sleight of Mind. Your opponent's like, what the fuck is happening to me right now? Off of Darkslick Shores?
I just love when like you have all these cards that are like approximately the same, right? Like you have your Spell Pierce and your Flusterstorm. But then you just sometimes hit the spot where like the one that you have is either completely useless compared to the other one, or it's like actually just the complete nuts. Like... You know, like somebody taps out for an artifact, you're looking at your like Flusterstorm and you're like, well, goddamn, this sucks. But like then somebody, you know, just kind of naked goes off a storm and you're just like, oh, oops. Ding, 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 ding.
Stifle. What?
So
you have one of lots of one-ofs. Yeah. So Jack on Tainted Pact. How did he end up doing, Tristan? In the
He lost in the quarters to Ed, I think, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, because it was, I mean, we can go over matchups later or now if you want. It's up to you.
I was just curious about like, yeah, how he did We'll run through this and then we'll get into the meat of things.
Sure. Yeah. I think he got bumped in the quarters, if I remember correctly.
In second, we had a Russell on, it's like forward color green sun.
It's like the Yorian Zenith deck, like the max greed, never punished 80 card pile of cards.
Yeah. Fit all the design mistakes in and then tutor them.
Yes.
You know how many plus or minus one copy of Hornet Queen, higher or lower?
No, it wasn't that cool. He was only playing good cards.
he came to win the tournament. He put good cards in his deck.
Yeah. Also, our meta isn't as imprint that it would require Hornet Queen. So
he was on the variant that had Primeval Titan and Field of the Dead, though.
Oh, that Elliot shit.
Yeah, it was popular on Moto, like, I feel like 4 or 5 months ago. But, yeah.
Speaking of coming to win the tournament, in third, Tristan, on Sneak and Show. We'll get into the details of that later, so I'm going to blitz through that. Yeah, Jin on Ant. Real deal Ant. I think the only card printed after, I don't know, like, 2018 is the big ooze.
Ave?
Yeah. When was Wishclaw?
Wishclaw was Eldraine.
The best card in Eldraine. I'm going to put that out there right now.
Quickly, before you move on, I really want to shout out Jin because it was his first top eight and he was very, very proud of himself. And I was also very proud of him. And then I 2-0'd
him. I want to shout out Jin because he crushed me in the Swiss or in the, like, the, what do you call it? The, yeah,
Swiss.
Yeah.
Swiss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just a joy to play against.
Yeah. He's
going to like, there's actually a really funny moment I'll talk about later, but like, I just like I fucking loves Magic. And like, we've talked a lot on this podcast about how I don't know how much I love Magic anymore, but I was just like having a fun. We both having like a real good time. Fifth, Nathan, the spike. Oops, all spells. You know, sometimes you get people and sometimes you get people about 8 times in a row and then make top 8. So shout out to Nathan. We have Ed on, I think he registered BG Rock. I heard they're playing like a real grindy game featuring Fiend Artisan, and then they have some other cards like I'm gonna have to read this one, like Allosaurus Shepherd. This card looks good.
I think they just reprinted it. Yeah,
Glimpse of Nature. Whew. Wow.
I don't think they actually play Glimpse of Nature, do they?
I know Ed plays Glimpse of Nature. I'm gonna just kind of call him out here because he played one and then his opponent pushed his Narset forward and said, "That resolves. You know what this does, right? Because it's not in English." And Ed goes, "Whoa." And then he kind of takes a pause and he smiles a little bit and then just shuffles his cards around and goes, "Guess that's a misplay." And then goes, "I'll attack Narset." And then his opponent swords the creature that would have killed Narset. It was very good.
This is classic Ed play right here.
Dude, I've missed Ed. Holy shit.
So he does play Glimpse. He won that game too, for the record.
Of course he would. He would like luck out and just like, ooh, and he'd have the biggest grin on his face and he'd win. He's like, "I'm filthy." And you're like, "Yes, you are, sir."
So I'm just going to keep telling this story because like this is like a, you know, like where you're like, what else does that card do? His opponent, untapped after that, had the Narset still, tried to Daze Undoing. And Ed flashed in, what's the card that doesn't let you search?
Oh, Opposition Agent.
Yeah, flash an Opposition Agent. And his opponent goes, "Yeah, that's fine." And then looked down, had played land for turn, and so had planes up and a fetch land and went, "Oh, wow, I should have cracked my fetch for an island." And then drew 7, couldn't kill his elves, and then died on the crackback.
Oh, God.
It was great. In 7th place after the Swiss, we had Anthony, a true hero, playing Burn. The year of our Lord 2022 with Uro running amok. Have Roiling Vortex.
They did, yeah. Anthony's a modern aficionado, very nice guy, very good player. really just wanted to try out Legacy, had most of Legacy Burn because he has Modern Burn. Was really happy to see him do well in the tournament.
Nice. Just use some Chain Lightnings and Fire Blasts and we're ready to go.
Yeah.
Oh, that must be sweet if you come from playing Modern Burn and you cast Fire Blast for the first time. It just must feel so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Your opponent's like, counterspell, you're like, kill you.
Imagine Price of Progress in Modern.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and Price of Progress. I was going to say, I'm like, some of the Burn Legacy cards are truly impressive.
There were a couple of Burn players. I don't know if this is Anthony who I saw, but the largest Price of Progress I saw was for 12. Delightful. Shouldn't have tapped your Wasteland for colorless mana, my friend. And then rounding out the top eight, also a friend of the podcast, Brendan Lensink. Some handsome, generous man lent him 8-cast, and he managed a top 8 with it by playing Chalice and then making a bunch of artifacts. And that's it. If this was Legacy in every tournament, it would look pretty healthy. There's some like problematic cards in there, but like, you know.
So just from, I guess, Quinn and Tristan, like, what did the overall like metagame look like? Like, was it a general kind of what we expect to see in a big event, or was it a bit more of a Wild West, or did it skew any certain ways?
It definitely wasn't what you would expect to see in like a like challenge, for sure. Yeah. There was like one person on Blue Red Dove, unless we're forgetting someone. I do think the influence of that, like the specter of Delver, was hanging over things because there was a lot of combo. Like, people were trying to go fucking fast.
Yeah, there was, I would say it was probably at least a 60% combo field, if I had to guess.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
6-0, like more than half was combo?
I think so, yeah.
Oh my God.
Which I think really brings home how awesome it is that like elves and burn.
I was just going to say,
made like, made this... the top 8.
Yeah.
Because there's like insane. Reanimator, Show and Tell, whatever else running around. And like, you know, someone's out there just casting Chain Lightning.
I think there is definitely like, burn has always been a budget component, but there is quite a few like combo decks now that kind of skew a little bit more budgety. Interestingly, like, well, I wouldn't even say like Nathan for Oops, like he's been playing that list. He basically has Oops all spells on lockdown. I don't know if he's gotten rid of his other cards, but 60%, that's unhealthy.
But I mean, yeah, because I mean, would you count Depths as a combo deck? Because I would.
Yeah, I would for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Because there was like one number of Depths, yeah.
And like Josh for sure was on like turbo Depths. Like he was, it wasn't like going slow.
Yeah. Wow. So
was anyone was on any, was there any D&T coin?
I was just gonna ask that question. Like
at least one. I know Freeman played D&T. Oh, he's Freeman, whenever he doesn't play a lot of like senior, but when he comes, he's playing D&T. Maybe one other person. But not I didn't see a lot of Thalias.
So like low on Delver, low on D&T.
Yeah. And I brought another sweeper into my sideboard for this tournament because I was expecting like in our meta, like there'll be like a lot of D&T.
Just me stopping in, I saw so many pyroclasms before the tournament even started.
Yeah. Actually, in retrospect, so I was talking to Tristan the night before the tournament. I was like audibling into a deck and looking at the sideboard and going, I'm a combo deck. I don't need Force Negation. I'm not here to stop people from doing stuff. They're here to stop me. And I'm like, I'm gonna put it like a pyroclasm in or something. And he's like, yeah, that sounds way better in our meta. In retrospect, the Force Negation would have been pretty good.
Yeah.
Because lost a storm twice.
So I also thought you were coming still, Jeff, the night before too. So I was like,
so
you know,
yeah, we were like, well, there's at least two people playing like
I'm
white
throwing
creatures.
Off the meta. That's a good that's a good scheme.
What did you end up playing, Quinn?
I played blue green Omnitail, which is not a supposed to be a competitive deck, but I saw a really great list. I should have left it up so that I could say who it was and where it was from. I'll try and find it later and put it in the notes, but it was in a paper tournament in the States somewhere, and it splashed red. So I guess another thing that didn't come up, I was like kind of thinking like there'd be a lot of control. I mean, there was a lot of Jeskai control and a lot of Delver. And so I was playing one main deck Veil, and then splashing for one Pyroblast main deck and then a couple of red cards at the side. And I played a main deck Carpet of Flowers. And when I did have a Jeskai opponent, I happened to draw all three of their cards and they were like, what the hell is going on? We're in game one. Like they were like Carpet. I'm like Carpet. And they prismatic ending it, which is like, you know, fair. And then they're like, like I need to brainstorm. I'm like, I'll just Pyroblast that. I think and like Pyroblast.
Was this Richard?
Yes. I also, spoiler, Richard played Tristan and I was making a joke being like, you're playing the big brain combo deck. You let this or big brain control deck. You let this combo monkey beat you. What did he do? You have so many counter spells. And he goes, oh, well, he played the card Veil of Summer. And I looked at all the red blasts in my hand and went, oh, that doesn't counter Veil of Summer. And then we played and he goes, what are you going to turn game one Veil of Summer with all my red blasts? And I was like, oh yeah, main deck red blast. He's like, I might be looking at him like, well, Veil of Summer. And he was just like, oh, what? Seriously?
Well, do we want to talk about what's kind of funny about that? Is that Veil of Summer doesn't stop Pyroblast.
Oh, I guess from
you, Veil of Summer gives your spells protection from.
Oh yeah. We'll stop Pyroblast on Omni. Yes.
Yeah.
But it does. Yeah. It does make things uncounterable.
It's true.
I think I just put an Emrakul against him too. Cause like he can't remove it. Right.
I was like thumbing through your deck when I was there and it was like, oh, okay. A Pyroblast. Sure. And it was like, oh, a Veil. Like, okay. Yeah. You're show and tell. I was like, oh, also Carpet. Like it is just pre sideboarded.
Yeah. But it worked.
I think he had one outer to your Emrakul. I think he was on a Wandering Emperor. So technically he could exile it while attacking.
Oh, wow.
Float mana. Yeah. Trigger.
Just saying. Played your outs.
Yeah, I went back and forth on what to play. On Thursday, I showed up at Weekly Legacy for a while, for the first time in forever. I played Reanimator. I went 0-3 against all good matchups, which I mean, probably is like, I was a little rusty and also like a bit of bad luck, but I was just like, the thing about that was even when I won games, I didn't have fun. And so I was like desperately looking for something else. I've been trying to like play around with a red splash in Infect. Shout out as always to Sam Dams, who's working on that, but he can't work on it online. So none of that info is public yet. And also, I don't think he's really played enough to like come up with anything. But was Infect splashing Minskin Boo, which we don't need to talk about now, but hopefully we can talk about in the future because it seems like it might be good. But I wasn't ready to bring it to a big tournament, and so I found this Omnitel list and just like was like, we're gonna put Omniscience into play and see what people can do.
What did you end up finishing? You were pretty close to top eight, weren't you?
I lost my last match. I played James Johnson. Shout out to James, who
drove
by himself.
What?
From Seattle. He was supposed to come with someone else who had to like back out for some reason at the last minute. And so he just drove himself all the way from like Linwood, Washington. Got stuck at the border. Had to call to be like, I'm going to be 10 minutes late. And
oh,
they were like,
no.
We'll, like, hold on. We'll hold things for you if you're coming all the way from Seattle.
What a fucking hero.
Yeah. And he, our game two, I just like, you know, couldn't really get there. In our game one, we were both looking at the line and I'm like, I don't think he can kill me. And he's like, sorry, I need a second. I'm like, yeah, we're not going to run out of time, man. Like, take your time. You know, and like every other game action he takes is like quite fast. So I'm like, yeah, think about it. No problem. And he goes, okay, I think I got it. And I'm looking at the cards being like, I don't know what could be in your hand right now. And he just found a way to do it. A true master.
He is a storm master for sure.
There's also after we found out that like it was a clean cut. So when he's like, I might need a second, I'm like, oh buddy, we're not playing for anything. Like I would love to see what you come up with from this position.
Final question for you, Quinn. Did you get to run your one Eureka in the deck, or did you abstain from playing a sweet card?
Oh no, I would not run Blue Green Omni unless I had a chance to play Eureka that I have purchased. I actually played it against Jin on a when I had nothing in hand to put in, just to show, like, be like, I have a Eureka now. So this is the first time I had against Ed, where I got to actually resolve it and put in multiple permanents. And then we had to talk about how things resolved, because I was like, well, I think, you know, I'm like, I don't know what you have, but the cards you could have is, what's that 3-mana elf that like blows up an enchantment artifact? Rexage.
Rexage.
Like, you know, if you have Rexage, it's going to come and play the trigger. But I'm like, what happens is, if this resolves, I put something in, you put something in, and then if I stop and then you stop, nothing happens. But if I stop, you can keep putting permanents into play. And if I put another permanent and you stop, I get to keep putting permanents into play until I decide to stop. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, and then all the triggers go on the stack, active player, non-active player, and yours would resolve first. And he's like, okay. So I got to be like omniscience. And he's like, land. And I was like, Grizzlebrand. He's like, I don't have anything. I'm like, all right, let's resolve. Let's like finish resolving all the triggered abilities, which were there were none. And then I played Emrakul with my omniscience and killed him. But yeah, you can also, I forgot, you can put in planeswalkers because it's permanence.
It's just permanence, yeah.
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 Eureka's sick.
It was wild. It was like, I don't know, it's just fun to be like, so here's what's gonna happen, you know?
So I guess perhaps moving from one show and tell player to another. Tristan, can you tell us a little bit about what you played before we get into how you did?
Sure. I played a somewhat obscure but gaining traction version of blue-red featuring a very light green splash version of Sneak and Show that has been gaining a little bit of traction in Japan. The list that I ended up going with, I ended up taking as inspiration from a couple of different lists, but the main person who's been piloting this variant of Show and Tell is goes by Yusaku Matsumoto from Japan, and they've been putting up results with this type of list for the last few weeks at the very least. So a couple of weeks prior to the event, I'd been kind of mulling over what to play. I'd been shooting Jeff and Quinn a couple of messages here and there. Ed also actually about, you know, I think I'm going to play Show and Tell, partially because a lot of the foils from my Show and Tell deck, as some of you guys are aware, were actually Harry's foils. So I think part of me really wanted to go, I think as Quinn put it, samurai mode and die on the sword if I was going to play in this event. So ended up going with Sneak and Show, but I was like, okay, I'm not just going to go what's JPA done lately. I'm going to take some inspiration from some fun lists and do something that seems interesting and also powerful. And it ended up working out, which is nice.
So what are some of the unique call-outs other than like your classic Cantrip Cartel, big creatures, Show and Tell, Sneak Attack?
Yeah, so I think probably the most glaring and probably impactful inclusion is Archon of Cruelty. We've seen how good that card is in Black-Red Reanimator. It's always seemed kind of bizarre to me that Show and Tell hasn't adopted the card because of how... I mean, it's interesting because on the surface, it doesn't look as powerful as Grizzlebrand. Draw 7 cards, 7 life is much more powerful than Edict you, discard a card, you gain 3 life. You know the whole King Caboodle.
Card keep going.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few more lines of text, but the tempo swings that that card creates is just absurd. And I think you need to play with it to really realize how good it is. Like if you sneak attack in an Archon of Cruelty, it's an 18-point life swing. Your opponent discards 2 cards. You draw 2 cards. It's ridiculous. So that was easily the MVP for me, especially in a field where there was a ton of Caracas around. I mentioned this before. The amount of times that my opponents looked all too comfortable having casually played their Caracas as their land for turn, and I'm just sitting there with you know, a show and tell plus Archon. I'm just like, like, oh, you don't know what's coming. Like, this is going to be great.
The mid game of Archon is just so strong. Like, oh, when a bunch of permanents have been deployed, only a couple good cards are remaining in their hand, and you get to like 2 for 7 them or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really powerful. And like you said, it dodges a bunch of the typical tools that people use to fight.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what the first time you sneak attacked an Archon against me. I think I was on Death and Taxes or something. And I was just get out of here. Like, screw this card.
Yeah. It's absurd. I mean, like, even just in the instances, like, there are times in Show and Tell where you just sneak attack in Grizzlebrand, you draw 14, you don't find an Emrakul, and you just swing in for 7. Sometimes you draw 7 more, sometimes you don't, and then you pass the turn. But if you can deal 12, eat 2 of their creatures, take 2 of their cards from their hand, and you draw 2 cards and gain 6 life while doing it, it's just like, oh my God. It's so powerful.
When you're behind, like, it's good when you're ahead, it's good when you're on par, but when you're behind, it like really picks up the slack where the other cards, you know, Grisselbrand might be down on life, Emrakul, they might have like their defenses set up, but this thing's like, it's doing some damage.
Yeah. So,
very impressive.
And surprisingly, the Planeswalker mode, because it's edict a creature or Planeswalker, that came up a couple of times in the tournament, and it was game winning. Because I got to eat, you know, a Minsk and Boo, a Narset, stuff like that. And the fact that the first line of text reads, your opponent loses 3 life, discards a card, and then sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, period, means that if it's eating a Narset, you still get to draw a card because it's a second line of text afterwards, after eating the Narset. It's very, very good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very, very strong. I guess the second probably most glaring inclusion that I made in the 75 would be Expressive Iteration. I think that Preordain is just a card that has really not aged well. I think in a super heavy spell combo deck where you just want to play as many cheap cantrips as possible, it's still viable to play something like Preordain. But being able to dig 3 cards and being able to play lands and pedals off of Expressive Iteration is just, I've been casting the cards for 3 weeks now in Show and Tell, and I'm kind of mad at myself for not playing more of it at this point. It is so powerful. I mean, we all know how powerful Expressive Iteration is. People have been clamoring for it to get banned for, I don't know how many months now. It is wildly powerful. You need to shave your soul land count a little bit. I actually cut a City of Traders and added an extra basic just to make casting it a little bit easier. But when you cast it, it's so ridiculous, especially when you're behind. Like, having card draw or card advantage spells that are on par with what your opponent is most likely doing is just so important, I think, nowadays. And Preordain, it just doesn't really get you there. And then the other, I guess, probably glaring inclusions would be Fable of the Mirror Breaker and Pyro Blast. Fable is something that I've just been tinkering with for the last 2 weeks now. I saw it in one list and I was like, wow, that sounds really cool. It adds this really bizarre alternate win con to the deck that can win all by itself. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it in Pioneer or Modern, but basically if you get to the third mode where you make a creature, you get to a point where you can make tokens equal to the amount of mana you have at the end of every end step. So at the end of your opponent's turn, if you have 6 mana, you can make 6 dudes, and then you untap and you've got 12 power. And then you add that into the fact that if you have an Archon in play, you can copy an Archon. Post board, if you've got Fury, you can copy a Fury. Like, it's ridiculous.
You need 2 Fables to do that, right? It can't target itself.
No, it can target itself.
You sure? This is another target non-legendary creature.
Oh, maybe you're right. Oh, okay. Forget everything.
You just need a second one, and then you pop off.
You need the second one, then you pop off. You're correct. You're right. I didn't do that, so glad I didn't. That's good. I'm glad I didn't cheat. I did copy the goblin token though.
That's massive. And yeah, like, the mana you get off of that is so good.
The mana definitely came up in at least two games where having the extra lotus petal essentially or treasure token flat out won me the game. And then adding the rummage is very good. There are times where if your first couple of action spells get countered, just being able to filter away like a dead lotus petal, an extra land or something like that into, you know, potentially just two more cards in general is just really, really good. I think even post board, a lot of the time people tend to sideboard out their removal against show and tell, and having just 2/2 idiots can get there sometimes, you know, as McBain can attest to.
Yeah. And I'm cautiously eyeing the one Simian Spirit Guide in your list as well.
Oh yeah.
Which I know is secretly your like win con for for style points.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Simian Spirit Guide is a card that has seen an influx of play online, at least because of how much Delver there is. Being able to have an extra hidden lotus petal essentially to play around days is very powerful, and then sometimes you get to, you know, tickle your armpits and go and beat them down with a monkey.
You've even got the hidden monkey blast in the deck.
Oh, exactly. Yeah,
I don't know if you got to do anyone on that one, but
I didn't get to do it on the weekend. I have done it before though, but yeah, having the two main deck power blasts, that was just a preemptive. I think there's going to be a lot of Delver / control that I just don't want to have, like Spell Pierce or Flusterstorm, and that I'd rather have, you know, a good solid hard counter that also deals with things like Narset and Teferi in the main deck.
Yeah. I also like, again, you've got the rummage, you've got the expressive iterations, you've got a lot of ways to kind of get past the Pyro Blast if you're not looking for it.
And there were several times where I ended up binning Pyro Blasts that were dead in the matchup. Like I, you know, when I played against Elves in the finals, for example, I had a Pyro Blast in my opening hand and I was like, all right, discard you away. It's like, you know, just being able to do that because, you know, the rummage is up to two cards. So even if you just discard one card, get a new card, that's awesome in my opinion. But yeah, other than that, it's, I don't know if there's anything super standout. Oh, so the green splash, I'll admit the green splash was extremely last minute. When I found out that James was coming, I had a, I had a crisis. I was like, oh God, how much storm is there going to be? Like, I'm going to have to play him at some point. Like, thankfully I didn't. But it was super relevant because there was a lot of storm in the field. So some of these lists online have been splashing just the one trop main deck in order to play some number of veils and carpets in the sideboard. And so I just played one trop to play two veils and one carpet. And it was very, very relevant throughout the day.
Do you want to walk through your sideboard and any notable like things that came up?
Sure. So I guess a quick rundown of the 15.
Oh, I just saw the last one, the last card on the end there.
Oh, the defense grid. Yeah. Okay. So there's a defense grid. There's one pithing needle, one engineered explosives, one graft digger's cage, one surgical, one meltdown, two fury, two magus of the moon, one carpet, two veil of summer, one brazen borrower, and one stifle.
I think that's what McBain was getting at.
Ooh, boy. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So stifle is surprisingly a very good card in show and tell in the sideboard. JPA has actually been on two lately because of the influx of things like Ant and Doomsday on Moto.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. So Doomsday is one of the deck's worst matchups by far. It's a spell-based combo deck that has a ton of interaction and you don't have many ways to interact with Thassa's Oracle. You know, because often when they know that they're playing against a deck with counter magic, they're going to be getting a Cavern of Souls as part of that top five cards.
Right.
So having something that daggers that trigger on the stack is very, very good. Well, you deleted my list, so I can't actually look at my sideboard.
It's moved down a little bit.
Oh, it's moved down. There we go. Yeah, so stifle, and then being able to stifle a storm trigger against Ant or Tess is just like the sickest way to win that matchup, honestly. Like, I only played against Storm once, and it was against Jin in the quarters, and I just turned 2'd him both games, or turned 3'd him one game, sorry, and turned 2'd him next game. Sorry, Jin. And then stifle bleeds into matchups like elves, you know, being able to stifle a crater hoof trigger is very, very good. Just things that, you know, can, you know, being, again, even bleeding into D&T, you know, obviously you want to use Magus to stop their, you know, their ways of mucking with your lands and whatnot, or Caracas in general. But like, even just stifling one Caracas trigger can win you a game.
Yeah, for sure.
Against D&T. The Furies. Go on.
I was just going to ask, how are the Furies? That's a card that I don't own, but every time I see it being brought up, it's always in a very terrifying light.
So Fury is a very, obviously it's, you know, prominently going to be at its best against something like D&T. It's a non-Thalia taxable sweeper against D&T. So it's very, very good. Good against elves, and again, just bleeds into any creature matchup where playing, even just playing a 5-mana double striking 3/3 that kills one or two creatures, or even a planeswalker on its way down, is just really strong. I definitely still like Pyroclasm in lists like this, but again, I hadn't tried Fury yet, and I've been seeing some number between 2 and 3 Furies in a lot of these show and tell sideboards, so it's like, I'm just going to play Fury.
I think it makes sense. Like, the pitch cast is so big too. Like, if you're specifically worried about something like Thalia and getting taxed on mana, like the ability to just like chuck cast Fury and then go off that same turn is just huge.
Yeah.
Which is like a really good reason to play Expressive Iteration over Preordain as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then, yeah, Engineered Explosives is just another kind of sweeper effect that bleeds into a ton of different matchups. You know, cleans up idiots, cleans up problematic permanents. Just a good card overall, and being 3 color just makes it that much better than something like a Pyroclasm or something like that. Pithing Needle, again, for Caracas decks, and then problematic planeswalkers, etc., etc. 2 pieces of Graveyard Hate. I was thinking about playing 2 Surgicals, but I knew that some number of people were going to be on elves, predominantly Ed, because I'd been talking to Ed quite a bit. So again, this is definitely a flaw of mine, where I tend to let what I know for sure certain strong players at least are playing dictate what I'm going to put in my sideboard. Because if I, you know, if I end up doing well, I expect to run into those people at some point. And I
mean, he came in second. You weren't wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So it ended up working out. So I opted for that as my second piece of kind of Graveyard / Green Sun Zenith Hate. Just a good card in general. Meltdown, again, is for your Stompy decks, your 8 cast, your Turbo Forge, stuff like that. Just a card that has become a mainstay, I think, in a lot of Legacy sideboards that have red at this point in time.
Interesting to see how the Meltdown ubiquity has changed decks.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, there's certain decks that just, like, it's kind of like if all of a sudden everyone started playing Veil again or something like that, like the metagame shifts around it. Meltdown is definitely one of those cards that's like really low cost for people. Like, it generally has targets, but the overly powerful cards are just, or the overly powerful decks are really pushed down by it.
I will admit I was considering playing a Subterranean Tremors in that slot, which is significantly worse than Meltdown, but is 100 times sweeter, especially if you get to make an 8/8 lizard when you do it. But and then I guess the last slot would be that Brazen Borrower. I expected there to be a good number of Depths players at this event, and having a bounce spell that acts as a threat and can, again, it bleeds into so many different matchups. Brazen Borrower is just a good card against so many different decks. that I was like, I'm just going to play this over Echoing Truth or something like that. I wanted to have at least one bounce spell in my sideboard, and I opted for Brazen Borrower.
Well, we might have to call you Caesar, because for an ape, this is pretty well thought out.
Wow. Were you like saving that one up? Did you think of the last
name? No, it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
But I really like your attitude, Tristan, of like that pre-tournament scouting of like, I want to win this event. And if I'm going to win it, I have to expect to take down some of these killers. And to do that, I'm going to like just slightly tweak the knobs so that when it comes up, I'm prepared for it. I do like your like last minute, the cars like running in the garage and you're running in for like your tropical island and your veils. Like that's.
No, like I'm not even kidding. It was about, I think it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I was getting ready for bed. Caitlin was already asleep. I was just like scrolling through Facebook on my phone and James Johnson was like, does anyone want to carpool to the Vancouver event tomorrow? And I was just like, holy shit, I need to play green. Like,
it's that classic meme list where like the woman's like sleeping in her bed and she's like, oh, I wonder what he's thinking about this. And then you're like on the other side of the bed on your phone, like, oh my God, James Johnson's coming.
Well, I mean, it ended up being a very, good call in general. There was 4 storm players, I think. And then
that's crazy for a 35 player tournament where like storm's kind of on the downturn anyways. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it worked out and it was very good against Richard, as Quinn mentioned earlier.
Sorry, Richard.
Yeah, sorry, Richard. it was, yes, it was thought out for sure, but my primary goal was I just want to have fun. I mentioned this to Quinn actually during the tournament. I had interacted with Harry a good number of times, you know, over the past probably decade and a bit that I'd been going to Stronghold, going to Connections and whatnot, but I didn't really know him that well, but the very first, I think it was a Winter Classic that I played in, Harry was there. I think it was actually 2016. I think it was the one that you won, Jeff, if I'm remembering correctly.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think I'd started out the tournament 2-0. I was very new to Legacy at the time, and I think I ended up going 2-3, and I was looking pretty dejected, and Harry saw me, and he pulled me off to the side. And he was asking me how it was going. And I kind of told him that I'd started well. And then I kind of fell short a little bit. And he said, the most important thing is just to have fun. He's like, as long as you have fun, that's all that matters. And I think in a tournament like this, and this isn't to, you know, belittle people that want to be competitive and want to do that, but I think that that's something that's lost on Magic players a lot lately. You know, maybe in the year 2022 more so than, you know, back then, but having fun is the reason why we play this game at the end of the day. For me, at least it is. I think for a lot of Legacy people in general. So throughout the day, I kept reminding myself, just remember to have fun. Did it between every single round, did it right before my first top 8 match. Did it right before the semifinals when I was rematched against Russell after he absolutely shit on me in the Swiss. And even in the finals against Ed, I think that was one of the most fun matches of Magic I've played, because he and I were literally just shooting the shit the entire time. Like, I'm sad that you guys weren't there to see it, but like, we were literally just bickering at each other the whole time. It was amazing.
I played old people I knew, at least like the person I knew least was probably Alfred, who had like had played before. And yeah, I had like a great time. It was just like my match with Jin was so fucking fun. In game one, I just did him dirty, but game two, he resolves. What's that card called? It costs 5 mana. You draw a bunch of cards.
Oh, Ad Nauseam.
He resolves Ad Nauseam.
Yeah.
He draws a zillion cards and goes to 1, and he's looking and he goes, and I'm going like storm at least like half-assed, right? So I'm like, you gotta keep going. And he was like, what am I supposed to keep going now? I'm like, I mean, I can't tell you to kill yourself, but you can't kill me. And he goes, are you gonna kill me? And I was like, I don't know. I wasn't, spoiler. But he goes to one. And then he ends up beating me and goes, oh, sorry, man, I got really lucky. And I'm like, no, you got so unlucky. I had like four draw steps after you just like, you like resolve at, like, we know how this works. You resolve ad nauseum, you win the game. You, like, it's five mana, you win the game, right? But it was just like shit like that happened all day.
That's great.
Yeah, I was super sad I couldn't make it.
I learned amazing, a rules thing. Ed and I learned a rules thing in separate ways. Grist kills Emrakul.
It sure does. Sorry to, I guess we're going to bad beat Ed's here on air. So game one of our finals match, I put in a turn three Emrakul, and he's like, oh no, that's not good. And he has, I think, six elves in play at this point. And I'm thinking I'm probably dead, honestly. He spends his turn casting two Green Sun Zeniths for a couple of different utility elves. I couldn't even remember what they were. It didn't matter. And he's just like, I think I'm just going to eat the six permanents here, and then I'm going to try and kill you on my turn. I was like, sure. Passes a turn. I swing in immediately. He sacks six things. And then he just like, it's like the light bulb went off in his head. And he's just like, Grist kills Emrakul, doesn't it? Like, uh-huh. And he just honest. Like, and he thinks, you know how Ed does. He's, when you're dead, his eyes light up. You know you're dead. When he's got the worst poker face of any Magic player I've ever known. When you're dead, you're dead. Like, there's literally, you know, he's thought of literally everything that you could have, you know, when you're dead against Ed. And he scooped up his cards pretty quickly after thinking for a solid, you know, minute or two. And then immediately was just like, Grist kills Emrakul. It's like, yeah, sure does.
I have never really read all of Grist, which is funny because I think I used it one time on a Thursday. But Alfred's like, I'm holding Emrakul in my hand. I'm like, I'm not tapping it if I can play Emrakul. He had like five permanents. I'm like, whoa, you better make a lot of permanents on your next turn. And he plays Grist. And I'm like, oh, sorry, can I read Grist again? And I like turn it around and I'm like, minus two. And I look at the Emrakul. I'm like, protection from colored spells. Oh, no. And then I just tried to dig for Omni for like five turns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I learned this the hard way. When I first built like a show and tell-esque deck, probably 11 years ago or so, someone killed my Emrakul with an Intrepid Hero. And I was like,
whoa.
I was like, it can't do that. And it's like, it sure can. And then I read it and I was like, oh no, it's just spells. It's not abilities. So yeah. So don't forget what Grist does, folks.
Well, it's just like Solitude, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Fuck that card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Why do you get to get around Thalia attacks?
Yeah, look, the more I think about this stuff, and this is talking for a bigger thing, like all of the fucking elemental incarnations are terrible. Like, not okay.
I wouldn't want to stick the IRS on anyone, but you deserve to be audited, is all I'm saying. Like, if I have to pay taxes, you should have to pay taxes.
Fury's kind of sweet. I like Fury.
Fury's like kind of sweet, but like they're all kind of fucked up.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, even Subtlety, which is like has zero applications in Legacy. I've seen that card do some fucking disgusting things in Modern. It is so good. So good.
Oh, I won a game by just like playing Endurance on the weekend. Like, oh, your graveyard? No, get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Endurance.
It only costs three mana.
Yeah, Endurance sucks. I don't like Endurance.
As a dredge aficionado, do not respect the dredge. Not a dredge aficionado.
But yeah, no, it was a very fun event overall. And I'm, you know, I would have been happy to have played against anyone in the finals, but the fact that it was Ed and he and I had been spitballing ideas, honestly, about the event for probably 2 weeks leading up to it, because he, you know, by his own admission, hasn't paid attention to Legacy really much at all the last year or two. You know, he's always kind of aware of what's going on, but he said the amount of Newton content that he absorbed in the last 2 weeks was, you know, and the fact that he made the finals, it's just like incredible player and just like a really good friend, and just like was really happy to share the battlefield with him at the end of the day. And it was awesome. I got to shove a fucking Archon down his throat on turn two in game three. And it was sick.
I know like Ed's an example of one of those players that had a lot of like life stuff and just busyness come up and not able to make Thursdays. And for a few years now, because of this whole pandemic, like if you can't make Thursdays, you can't play Legacy basically. And so people can just check out and not really pay attention. And what we used to have is these like kind of like 1K or 1.5K events that would happen every month or 2 months that kind of give people something to aim for. And it's great to see people like Ed and again, some of these other players that came out get to go to these events and they get to kind of consume whatever content's out there, read whatever articles, come see people that they haven't seen in a long time. And just because you can't make Thursdays to one location in the lower mainland doesn't mean that like you can't play Legacy. So I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. This was the tournament like out of the two that I've had to miss chunks of, like I said, to get to play at Puget Sound. Like this is the two that I was more like busted up about. Because, I mean, exactly what you're talking about, Tristan. I have extremely fond memories of losing to McBain in, like, the finals or semis or something because he kept in, like, Spell Pierce against D&T and, like, pierced my Batter Skull. And it was, like, the grossest thing. And, like,
that was just so good when I got you on that.
But just, like, the feeling where the whole tournament leading up to that, I feel like there's this kind of overhanging anxiety. Like no matter how comfortable you are playing your deck or how good you are at Magic, you know, you're like, I need to do well. I need to get in the top eight. Like, and it's tense. And then when you get playing in the finals or close to with somebody you just know really well, like, oh man, it's so good.
Yeah. Well, in our game too, I admittedly, I kept a hand that I probably wouldn't keep against anyone other than someone like Ed or one of you guys even, because I was like, this hand fucking sucks, but it's so sick that I'm going to keep it anyways, because I had the turn one Stifle for his fetch. I had the Fury plus red card for his first couple of idiots that he played out. And sure as shit, I was like, I said right before the game, this hand sucks. I'm probably going to lose this game, but I can't resist keeping it because it's sick. And let's see what happens. So sure enough, he played fetch pass. I was like, okay. Land go, and he tries to crack fetch and like Stifle, and he was just like the small audience that we had went wild, and it was like, this is sick. And then he went land, or he played Dryad Arbor as his land for turn and then pass, and I was like, okay, second land go. And then he goes basic forest tap that and Arbor for visionary draw card. I'm like, sure. I'm like, oh, I could wait like a turn for him to spit out a couple more idiots, but like, I can't resist like, you know, strip mining him and killing, you know, two creatures in the process. So I'm like, yeah, sure. Fuck it. Fury pitch sneak attack, which was my only enabler at the time, just to like decimate his board. And then I proceed to not find land number three for six turns and then just like die to a hoof. I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's fine.
It's worth it though.
No regrets. Like it was sick. So
when you get when your land gets stifled out of a deck you don't expect that from, oh man.
I was like,
I think like when you play Ed too, you just want to get him talking. You know? Yeah.
Like we it's played like a meta strategy.
No, not that he plays worse. It's just like you want to enjoy the moment, soak it in, you know? Like we were playing and he's like, you're an infect, right? I'm like, I'm not an infect. And I'm like, I had two fetch lands and like my fetch has got every land. And I'm like, well, I can lead with like Scalding Tarn here. I'm like, Misty Rainforest. And he's like, I'm like, I'll fetch a Trop. And he was like, I'll play Ponder. And he's like, you don't infect. I'm like, Ed, I wouldn't lie to you. I wouldn't say no. I would just shrug my shoulders. And he's like, come on. And I'm like, I wouldn't lie to your face, man. Come on. And he untaps. And I think he played Fiend Artisan. I was like, Fiend Artisan, what the fuck's happening? He's like, I'm on BG Rock. And I untapped and I was like, I told you I wasn't infect. I'm so sorry. Ancient Tomb. And he was like, whoa.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah. And I mean, worth noting too, that Ed was defending the title. He won the last Harry Wong Memorial. He's the
reigning champion.
Like, yeah, he almost went back to back. That's impressive.
2 years. Like, he won the last one. He vanished into the shadows. 2 years went by. You know, a fucking pandemic happened. He came out and he was in the finals again. Like,
wow. So the trophy then goes, what, Rowan, Ed, you?
Yes, that is correct.
Wow. And
Brian before that? Is that the year before that?
Oh,
Brian, yeah.
Brian Lee.
Was Brian after Rowan? Yeah, Brian, wasn't that a classic? Or was that just was that the Harry Long or was it just a classic?
I think it was just the Winter Classic or the Summer Classic.
I don't think that was
because it was for Harry a UC. Long. That's why I thought it might be like a.
Yeah.
Gotta see that trophy.
Yeah.
You don't get to like keep it for the year, do you?
I don't think so. I didn't even see the trophy. Is there a physical trophy?
There's a physical trophy, yeah.
No, I didn't even see it.
I wouldn't want to take it. I'd be like, no, put my name on it and then, like, keep it right here so everyone could like be looking at PAX and be like, what does that say?
But yeah, no, it was an amazing event. And honestly, I never really go into any tournament expecting to win. Honestly, I want to try and do my best, but winning this one in particular, especially after 2 years off, felt special for sure.
The picture that Connections posted on their Facebook of you with your like new Emrakul playmat holding up all your like foily show and tell cards and holding that foily footed strand.
Mm.
You're wearing a mask, obviously, but like the smile on your face is pretty intense.
I had the biggest shit eating grin under there. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was a big shout out to Matt. It was a very smoothly run event. Honestly, it didn't seem like we went to time really much. I don't think
Elliot left early.
I think we went to turns. The field is 60% combo. So I hope not.
It went to turns like twice in six rounds.
I think so. Yeah. And there was even one round where it ended 5 minutes early. From remembering,
we're pretty fast. I mean, I guess when you have combo, that's what happens. Yeah. But
you know, sick prizes again. You know, like there was fetch lands being given out every other round, secret lairs. Like it was just sweet. It was just a good time. It was so fun to just shoot the shit with people again, and so many people again that just haven't seen in a long time. So, really good time.
So it was the gathering all along.
It's always been the gathering.
It's also that trophy. Like, winning's fun, obviously. Like, I tried to do it, but I'm not like living or dying by like my magic results. But like, I do want to get on the trophy one day.
Yeah, definitely.
Next year, Quinn. You can do it. You got to train.
No, I'm not going to train. I just like, I just wanted to, I care a little bit more.
Just play Infect next time.
Yeah, if I had more time.
Follow your heart.
If I had more time to test, I would have played Infect. I defaulted to my second favorite Tropical Island deck.
Isn't that kind of the inverse? I think if you had more time to test, you realize Infect isn't good.
I think. So Richard and I were talking about this, and he was like, hey, someone told me that you were trying Minskin Boo and Infect, and we were talking about it, and he goes, fuck, should I buy into Infect? This sounds awesome. We could talk about this next cast. I think there's like something there. And if the meta stays the way it is, at worst, you get to play Pyroblast in your sideboard. Which like is like pretty strong.
I mean, Sam looks pretty excited.
Yeah, and Sam's actually a good Magic player, so trust him, not me. He said it's good.
The card is very good. I almost died to it against my lands opponent in round 5, but I only beat it because I played an Archon, it ate a 7/7 hamster, and then on his upkeep, he forgot his trigger to make a new one.
Oh,
I was just like,
skillful.
I am so like, fucking dead otherwise. Because then I got to attack and eat it. So
the fact that it Ophiomancers the hamster like over and over again, like it just keeps coming back, is so absurd. And then in Infect, your opponent has to kill your Infect creatures. Like, unless they're about to die from regular damage, like they have to prioritize, like, I kill Blighted Agent. And then when you draw like a random pump spell, pump the hamster after you put counters onto the turn before, and then just like fling it at their face and draw 8 cards. Like, the damage is irrelevant. The game has ended.
Even just drawing four cards is it's absurd. It's absurd on a green red four drop.
But like, when it's like a 4/4 and you're like, invigorate, bring the hamster, and then you're just like, for a while, there's going to be a pause being like, oh, sorry, can I read that again? Like, yeah, you could read it.
I haven't committed Minsk and Boo to memory, but like, can you play Minsk and Boo and ETBs makes the hamster scale up and just fling it right away?
Fling the hamster and draw six.
And sure draw can. Six.
Yeah, so you draw, you can fling anything, and then you draw cards.
Sam is so excited. That's
insane. Yeah, it's fucked up.
Well, scale up doesn't remove keywords, right? So it would still have trample and haste.
Oh, except would it still be a ham? Does it still maintain its original creature?
Okay, maybe scale up.
It becomes a green worm.
Is it an addition? So
maybe scale up's a
doesn't say.
You can just
invigorate and draw five.
Right, and your Minsk is still around.
Yep.
Yes.
Wow. So your control opponent's like, oh my god.
Well, you could attack for five first, and then you can fling it.
Yeah.
So you can deal 10. Like, card is very, very good.
There's
the
weird
best thing is that they put it on Arena.
Yeah.
But it costs five on Arena.
Yeah. They had to nerf it on Arena. There's weird corner cases too, where like, you know, you can't like deal 10 to someone out of nowhere, but like if they're at five or less. And you have a Glistener Elf, you can pre-combat Berserk the Glistener Elf, and then it has Trample. And then you could put three counters on it and hit them for five.
Woo!
Jeez. I thought you could only do Berserk in combat.
You have to do it. It only dies if you do it before the damage step. So you can't be like, I take a hit and then I Berserk your guy, and then it dies. But you can play Berserk anytime you want. It just,
you can
like,
cast it before the
shit.
Combat damage step.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Never mind. You're right. Here I am trying to argue with the guy who owns like fucking beta berserks.
Well, I mean, the beta ones don't read properly. So,
yeah.
You know, like, it's like the first time I played Impulse and then tried to shuffle my library. My opponent was like, no, it doesn't do that anymore.
Well, this has been great. Do we want to wrap it up and go to That's Gassed to close things out?
Let's do it. Tristan, is there a guess? Would you like to go first or last?
I don't mind going first.
All right, takes away.
I definitely want to. I mean, I've already shouted out Matt and all the folks at Connections and whatnot, but I really want to shout out my partner in crime, my fiance Caitlin, who is always the most supportive when it comes to magic and whatnot, and you know, was very positive and saying kill everyone with all the spells before I left in the morning, not really understanding what all the cards do, but she knows what Grizzlebrand is, she knows what spaghetti monster is, and you know, she's my biggest fan when it comes to this, and she was ecstatic when I came home and I told her what happened, you know. So just a big shout out to her. She's why I get up every single day. So
have you thought about like marrying her?
Yeah, I'm gonna.
That's free advice.
I'm doing that in what are we at now? The 23rd, just under like around 50 days from now.
Woo!
Right on.
Yeah.
McBain, do you think that Lissa would be more supportive of you going to play Magic if you took down the odd tournament again here and there?
Probably.
We're trying to be positive. Jeff, you go next.
I just wanted to shout out, I mean, obviously, Matt and Max and everybody at Connections that puts this stuff together. It's, as we've said, and the whole reason for, you know, this episode, a great event and a great store. And it's always so nice to put this together for a good cause, like the BC Cancer Foundation. Yeah, I don't know. I just need to echo what I said earlier. Like, this is the tournament I'm the most upset about missing, regardless of, you know, prize pool or like attendance numbers, whatever. It's like, this is the community tournament. And, you know, those guys putting this on is awesome. Always a good time.
Building on that, I want to shout out the intersection of the Venn diagram in my mind right now. And that's, on one end, you've kind of got like, to your end, the community component, and this being the Harry Wong Memorial, raising money for BC Cancer, remembering our friend, remembering a member of the community, and like the fact that it's after the pandemic and it's like the first big tournament in the region, I think that's all huge. The other two components of that Venn diagram are foils. I'm not a huge foils fan, but Mr. Tristan most definitely is. And the third component of that Venn diagram is Sneak and Show. And Harry was a big proponent. He loved Sneak and Show, and he also really loved foils. And so for the community event to kind of occur, be the first thing to occur after the pandemic, and for it to be won by a blinged out Sneak and Show deck containing, if I'm not mistaken, some of Harry Wong's foil Sneak and Show cards, like I think it was destiny at that point. That and your opponents forgetting the odd trigger, it's always helpful as well. But I think that's really cool. So that is 100% certified. I'd even go to kerosene if I could be so bold.
Does kerosene burn hotter than gasoline?
I don't know. We'll leave it there. We'll let Chad fill us in.
Kerosene can't melt the steel Imperion. Jeff, I thought at least you would kind of find that one funny.
Maybe before Quinn takes over here real quick, I should say though, yes, all of the sneaks, all of the show and tells and the ponders, those were all Harry's at one point. And I said when I purchased them that I would do my best to channel my inner Harry and murder you all with them when I got the chance. And I felt like I may have had some celestial assistance, maybe.
There's some angels in the outfield going on.
Maybe. I don't know. Wherever he is riding the cosmos, you know. Thank you, Harry.
And even though these guys were cowards and they dodged you. Just kidding. I have obviously been down on Magic, and I think it actually came up where like McBain at Always Positive, you're like, well, it's about the gathering. I'm like, I fucking see you guys all the time. Like, we're friends, and it extends far beyond this game that all brought us together, which I'm still grateful for. So, you know, no matter what happens, I'll love Legacy because, you know, well, that's why we're all here. But it was a reminder that it is about the gathering, because I saw people I don't see all the time. So Ed's a good example. Someone I consider, like, you know, other people I played, like one of my better friends. But he's like a Magic friend. And so he's been playing Magic less, and I've been playing Magic less, and I just haven't seen him a lot. Alfred, who I basically only see at the Harry Wong Memorial Classic or sometimes the other seasonal classics, which I haven't been any for a while. James Johnson, who drove up from Seattle to give me a good old fashioned Stormin, you know, to let me taste the tendrils of agony. I've never been so happy to have seven oozes shoved down my throat. Jin and Josh, who are regulars on Thursdays. Richard, who was like, dude, when's the last time we saw each other? I'm like, fuck, I don't know. Have we run into each other at Stronghold during like the whole like lockdown thing? He's like, I don't think so. I'm like, well, man, it's fucking good to see you. It was a joy, win or lose. And I was exactly 50-50 on the day. So both of those things, to see all of those people, to sling some cards with them, to miss triggers, have them miss triggers, to play main deck Pyroblast or to be main deck Pyroblasted. It all felt really good.
To be or not to be.
Yes. I got Boseijude, I Boseijude. It was just poetic.
Just two dudes chucking lands at each other.
Yeah. Making a judge call to be like, how do I time this again? I need to sort of refresh myself on Dark Depth stage. It's been a while since I played Magic. All right. Before we go, anything else you gentlemen would like to talk about?
Thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
Thank you for joining us. We true keep pleasure. Doing this thing where we invite people when they win stuff. Like, can we just start being selective? Like, we should have tried this a long time ago.
That's true. We didn't need to wait for an excuse.
Well, I remember right before the pandemic, I think you were a little drunk, so maybe we'll attest to that's why you forgot. But I remember you suggesting to me when we had that gather, I think it was for your pseudo kind of like bachelor gathering, Jeff, if I remember correctly. You were talking about doing a spice podcast.
Yeah. Oh, we were talking about that. No, yeah.
It was Quinn. And I remember I was like, he's drunk right now. But I mean, if he remembers, sweet, I'm down. But
Jeff's the remember guy. I'm the ideas man. So I'm going to blame that on him.
That explains our failing on two fronts then.
Yeah. We get together, you know, neither of us do our jobs properly. Yeah.
Oh, but I had a lot of fun. It was really, really awesome to hang out with you guys. And
the pleasure's all ours, man. Usually we would say, where can people find you? But I believe you're mostly off the grid, as they would say.
Smarter than the rest of us.
Yeah, Twitter doesn't exist. You'll never find me there. So,
yeah. All right. Well, if you would like to know more about how to make Sneak and Show a little extra picante, you'll have to show up in the Lower Mainland, talk to the man himself. He always has side games that you can play in between rounds. You can find the rest of us at Acne and Thresh. Is that our Twitter handle?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
I think it's Acne and Thresh. Or the Canadian Thresh, or the gmail.com. All right, perfect. Yeah. And I think this time we'll actually see you all in two thresholds. Thanks for listening.
Who knows?